This is Jen.
This is Kelsey.
And you're listening to the First 50 Pages.
So there are certain books that I've read where I leave the last page feeling like I've made a friend, or at the very least, I've enjoyed cheering on the protagonist throughout the story. These are often characters that stay with us, that are endeared to us, sometimes for a lifetime. There's Bilbo Baggins, Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn, Elizabeth Bennet, Fitzwilliam Darcy, Hamish Macbeth, Joe March, Atticus and Scout Finch, Albus Dumbledore, Gandalf, Hermione Granger, and of course, my personal favorite, Harry Potter.
Quite a list. So what makes these characters so memorable and enduring? They're likable.
Likable characters engage readers in the story. They truly give us someone to root for. We can relate to their flaws, we recognize and relate to their emotions and experiences, and can identify with their struggles. They're believable and authentic.
And Kelsey, I'm sure you have also observed this, that the world is craving feel-good stories right now.
Oh, for sure.
You know, bleak headlines continue in the news cycle, and the days of social isolation are getting harder to handle. A recent article in Rolling Stone magazine highlighted that there is a demand for positive music in the music industry right now. Songwriters are feeling inspired to bring uplifting songs to the airwaves and across social media, even while working from home studios and Zoom sessions, kind of like we are. Mm-hmm. And social media is being flooded with artists singing classic uplifting songs that encourage and reassure. And we're also seeing a return to acoustic guitar in music right now, which I find pretty cool. Are there any personal favorites that you've seen, Kelsey?
I think if I had to kind of pick my, you know, favorite album that actually recently got released, it would have to be Jason Isbell and the 400 Units Reunions album. It feels very folksy and Americana to me, which has kind of been my jam lately, or kind of my go-to music genre. It kind of puts me in this state of nostalgia and relaxes me. And, you know, I have it on in the background as I'm reading or cooking, cleaning. And it actually just came out on the 15th. But what I thought was really cool was that he released it to independent record stores a week early to hopefully help them out a little bit during this difficult time. And he kind of said that in an NPR interview, it was a way to kind of take care of the people who take care of us.
Very cool. I recently read that industry streaming data is showing increases in singer, songwriter, and acoustic rock music. And I suppose Jason Isbell would fall kind of in, you know, like you said, Americana. So it's it's kind of in that vein. I also read that Spotify is reporting that listeners are gravitating towards quote unquote chiller and more nostalgic music. And in my house, we are experiencing this. So the last couple of days, I've been hearing streaming of classic blues coming from my son's room. And I just find that very interesting. He's really into these classic blues, you know, B.B. King and the like. So it's been kind of fun to hear that.
Good for him, because due to his age, I'd be like, classic for him would maybe be like 90s, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Cool, I'm like,
you're going way back, kid. But yeah, and I think other artists that were kind of mentioned in this, you know, Bob Dylan, John Denver, Fleetwood Mac, Simon and Garfunkel. I read one song that is not necessarily an old song or a classic song, but it has been especially in high demand, is the song Home by Phillip Phillips. Mm-hmm. And I do hear that in like a lot of commercials. So,
yeah,
you know, I don't want to say the song's been ruined to me by the commercial side of things, but I definitely hear it in the commercials. But it's that, you know, acoustic ballad about remaining resolute in the face of uncertainty and coming together in a dark time. One of my personal favorites that I've really felt brought me a lot of joy was Jimmy Fallon and The Roots partnered with Brendan Urie from Panic at the Disco to remix the Under Pressure, the Queen David Bowie classic. Uh-huh. I thought that was such an awesome production and really just a cool way that I think musicians are coming together.
yeah, I think that's super awesome. And kind of a lot of celebrities are really using their platform now to kind of bring these positive stories to the world. One of my favorites, and I know I think it's one of yours too, Jen, has been the John Krasinski's SGN Some Good News broadcast that he's doing from home.
Oh, I love them. I love them.
They're so good.
Honestly, they've been an emotional rescue for me on more than one challenging day.
Yeah, they're just kind of that humor that you didn't know that you needed.
Yeah.
And I know another favorite for me, I feel like I'm just sharing all of my favorites right now, but
it's a good time to share.
Yeah, why not? I've really enjoyed listening and watching two celebrities read some of my favorite books. Live from the New York Public Library did Neil Gaiman's Coraline. Yeah, I know. Taika Waititi is leading a star-studded read-along of James and the Giant Peach. And my favorite, of course, has been following the Harry Potter at Home Readings playlist on Spotify, where each week some of the biggest names in entertainment are reading the first Harry Potter book. Daniel Radcliffe kicked it off, you know, since he played Harry Potter in the movies, he kicked it off by reading the first chapter. Eddie Redmayne, who's a pretty popular actor, voiced chapter 3, and actor and narrator Stephen Fry did chapter 4. So they've made it through chapter 6 so far, and I absolutely can't wait to see who reads the remaining chapters over the coming weeks.
One of my very favorite children's book authors, and I did check it out on him, is Peter H. Reynolds, but he has a book called The Word Collector. And this reminded me when you were talking about live from the New York Public Library, live from the Chicago Public Library, President and Michelle Obama, they read The Word Collector, and that was an awesome reading. I had a lot of fun watching that too.
Yeah, they're kind of cool to just, you know, hear them read it, but also see them read it at the same time. Kind of just a different experience that we don't normally get.
And right now there is that focus on strength and overcoming challenges, supporting each other, and finding ways to bring people together. And, you know, there will, of course, be the commercial incentives for artists to respond to the current moment. But I think it really will be interesting to see how our individual isolation and collective experience with this pandemic continue to influence art and culture, including literature and popular fiction.
So in our recent Best Books of the Decade episode, which seems like it was oh so long ago.
So long ago, doesn't it?
It does. I'm like, was that last year? Who knows? But we discussed at some length the influence of the unreliable narrator on reading trends for the last decade. So kind of for this episode, Jen and I have pulled together some of our favorite feel-good novels to share. And for many readers, it kind of might be time to leave the unreliable narrator in our rearview mirror, at least for a little while.
Right? I remember us talking about, like, what could cause the pendulum to swing back to something different?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
I think I know now, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I think there definitely is, like we said, a craving for those feel-good stories, those likable characters, you know, happy endings, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you're browsing for a likable character, it's also important to consider the tone of the book too. So do you want a heartwarming book with an uplifting storyline that will leave you feeling emotionally satisfied? We've got some recommendations.
Of course we do. It wouldn't be an episode if we didn't. So first off, I want to recommend The Little Paris Bookshop by Nina George. We did this one for Open Book Club a couple years ago, and if I'm remembering right, I thoroughly enjoyed reading this book and kind of loved the whole concept of this, you know, floating bookshop literary apothecary, and how Jean Perdue, who's the bookseller, you know, has this rare gift for sensing which books will help his customers. And of course, you know, the bookshop being on a beautifully restored barge on the Seine River didn't really hurt either. You know, and there's such quirky characters in this book, but they're oh so likable.
I know that one's been on my reading list for a long time. I'm just going to have to check it out. One book that meets this criteria for me is Lost Lake by Sarah Addison Allen. And Lost Lake is a gentle read falling into the genre of Southern fiction. It is leisurely paced and it has an engaging writing style and an atmospheric tone. And so it really evokes or conjures up the setting of the book. The story is about a widow and her daughter finding healing at a quirky summer resort tucked deep in the South Georgia swamplands. Bookla says, one would need a heart of steel or the skin of an alligator not to fall in love with Alan's beguiling cast of misfits. And I recently checked this book out, and it has been a pleasure to read. I've really enjoyed it. So definitely heartwarming tone with an uplifting storyline. I'm not at the end of the book yet, so I don't know quite if it's going to leave me emotionally satisfied, but I am predicting it might.
And one of my more recent reads, which is also a Read with Jenna selection from the Today Show, as well as it's been named one of the best books of the year by NPR, is Evie Drake Starts Over by Linda Holmes. So this kind of, you know, is a contemporary romance chick lit, which is kind of one of my go-to genres, but it really tackles the themes of bouncing back and love in a small town, but with this heartwarming tone and characters that are authentic but flawed, but you can't help but root for them and they're likable. And there's really just a lot of great dialogue in this book, which makes it a really engaging read. So it's a debut about the unlikely relationship between a young woman who's lost her husband and a major league pitcher who's lost his game. And it takes place in this sleepy seaside town in Maine. So it just is kind of, you know, both of them overcoming their issues and kind of, you know, can they form this relationship together and kind of what does their future hold?
And this book has been in pretty high demand, I think, you know, since it's come out. So I do think people are enjoying it and recommending it to their friends. Another book that it's also a gentle read that I would recommend that kind of meets these appeal elements is The Story of Arthur Truelove by Elizabeth Berg. And I think a lot of people have probably read Elizabeth Berg, but I think this story, the writing style for her is just a little bit different. It's a gentle read and a coming-of-age story. And the themes in the book are unlikely friendships, which I'm always a fan of, life in small towns, and coping with death. Publishers Weekly says about this book that Berg's novel is as comforting as fresh-baked cookies, with plenty of charm and memorable characters. Readers will be taken by the story about how friendship can defy any generation gap and how it's never too late to find a new purpose in life. I think this one would be a great choice for someone wanting a little break from darker novels.
Yeah, she's so great at just writing that type of book. And they're always just a little bit different that you're like, I didn't know she could write the storyline. Or, you know, she just, you think you've read them all, but not quite.
And this book is the first one of, I think there's at least three books now, but this is the first book. And I don't know if she's going to keep it at a trilogy or if she'll keep it going. But this one is the first one.
Oh, good. And then if, you know, for you readers out there that kind of want a heartwarming mystery, there's the Isabel Dalhousie mystery series by Alexander McCall Smith. I absolutely adore his books. It's a 13-book series with the latest expected to be published, you know, kind of later this year. And he writes just such great characters and sets the scene in all of his series so well. It's a, you know, cozy mystery, like I mentioned. It's a true gentle read, you know, with flawed and likable characters. But it kind of has like a still an upbeat and engaging tone, which sometimes can be kind of hard to find in a mystery. But the series features the insatiably curious professional philosopher and amateur sleuth Isabel Dalhousie, and she's truly one of fiction's most richly developed female detectives. You know, whether she's investigating a case or a problem of philosophy, she just keeps going, and, you know, she's always ready to pursue the answers to all of life's questions, both large and small.
And some other authors to consider if you've read all of these. Books by Fanny Flagg, Mary Balogh, Jeanette Oak, Kieran Kingsbury, and Sophie Kinsella. So that kind of rounds out those heartwarming tones.
So if you're looking for an upbeat book that is lighthearted, hopeful, and optimistic, we have some recommendations for you.
Of course we do. So as I was doing some research on these books with this appeal element, one of them came up on the list that's actually one of my favorite books, but I haven't thought about it for a long time. And that book is One Day by David Nichols. And I read this book several years ago, and I remember really liking it. Like I said, I would put it on my list of probably my top 20 favorite books. But I also remember that it was a love story that didn't have a perfect happy ending. And maybe that's why I enjoyed it so much, because I don't always have to have a happy ending in a love story. But I do remember that it was upbeat, romantic, and fun. And it's a book that I've recommended several times. There is wit and wisdom in David Nichols' writing, and his characters Dexter and Emma are likable and relatable. So the premise of the book is that Dexter and Emma meet on the day after their college graduation and embark in a complicated on-again, off-again friendship. And each chapter follows them on the anniversary of their meeting. And they don't always meet together, but it's like where they're at in their lives 1 year later. And when they do finally turn to each other, which is, this is not a spoiler, you know what's going to happen. It's a romantic comedy after all. It really is a beautiful moment because of the self-knowledge that each has gained from their life experiences of the last 20 years. You're like, this sounds familiar. Well, it did become a movie in 2011 starring Anne Hathaway and Jim Sturgess. But in my opinion, the book was exponentially better than the movie.
Isn't that usually how it always goes? Books usually better than the movie?
Most of the time for me, but...
Yeah, I shouldn't say always, but most of the time. I would like to recommend The Aurora Tea Garden Mysteries by Charlene Harris. It's set in small town Georgia, where, you know, everyone knows each other. These are cozy mysteries, star the likable 30-something Aurora, or Ro, as she's affectionately called, Tea Garden, a widow who's a part-time librarian and an amateur detective. This basically feels like my dream job. If I could be part detective, part librarian, I'm in. So Ro is always very ladylike, even while juggling a relationship with her mystery writer boyfriend and several other potential beaus. So there's, you know, a little bit of that romance thrown in. But it's a truly upbeat series that features wry humor and this great, you know, vivid cast of secondary characters that they're just all so different, but they all play such pivotal parts to the story, even though, you know, they're kind of labeled as secondary characters. So being mysteries, you know, the books themselves are very plot driven, but they do really stay upbeat and kind of within that cozy mystery genre.
Other authors that write in this style, this lighthearted, hopeful, optimistic style, you could try Meg Cabot, which I know, Kelsey, you are definitely a fan of.
Yep.
Marion Keyes, and then again, Sophie Kinsella and Fanny Flagg.
So likable characters exist across most genres and for all age groups. So if you love dysfunctional family stories with a heart, I recommend This Is Where I Leave You by Jonathan Tropper. It's one of my all-time favorite books, and it stars the dysfunctional Foxman family who comes together for the first time in years after their father dies of cancer. And his, you know, last dying wish was that they all sit Shiva, and which means that they spend 7 days and nights under the same roof. So, of course, the week quickly spins out of control. You know, they have these long-standing grudges that resurface. Multiple family secrets are revealed and old passions are reawakened. It's a truly character-driven story, and the characters are super flawed, but they're just inherently likable. And I think it makes them relatable that, you know, you have Judd, who's, you know, dealing with the breakup of his marriage and hasn't told his family. And, you know, then you have a sister that's stuck in an emotionless marriage, but, you know, still carries a torch for her childhood sweetheart. And then you have the older brother, Paul, who's like, wanting to, you know, still live in this, you know, I was a great high school athlete fantasy and I could have made it, you know. And then Philip, who's the charming youngest sibling, who just has this rakishness about him and this immaturity and selfishness that, you know, he's just the prodigal son that can do no wrong. And then their mother, of course, who's this celebrated parenting expert who, you know, is kind of forced to confront the consequences of her applying her sometimes bizarre techniques to how she raised her kids. So kind of, you know, when you're all put in the same space for that long a time, there's bound to be some fireworks that happen. But it truly, you know, at its heart is this book that you can't help but root for them, and you hope that they're able to work everything out and kind of cope with the loss of their dad.
I wonder how long it's going to take for there to be some other really exceptional dysfunctional family stories with a heart to be published, because I think, you know, just with all of our experiences stuck in, you know, quarantine and isolation with our loved ones, there's got to be some some excellent dysfunctional family stories with a heart. You know, of yeah. course, right now we need them to have some heart.
Yeah. Some great literary yeah. fuel there for aspiring writers.
There we go. You know, you can find likable science fiction characters too. Ready Player One was a book by Ernest Klein, but his follow-up book, Armada, also centers around video games in the 1980s. It's a fast-paced story with so much excitement and drama that readers will be happy to go along for the ride. They'll never doubt whether the good guys will win because they're constantly reminded good guys always win in the movies. So this isn't the kind of science fiction that revolutionizes a genre, but it is a fun read with likable characters. So if you've got, you know, a gamer in your house and you're trying to get him to read, maybe this would be a good suggestion.
And those of you that like the classics, and if The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy tops your list of favorite reads, you should definitely try The Ear Affair by Jasper Fjord and his Thursday Next novels.
I just have to say this about Jasper Fjord. Mm-hmm. Like when you go in the library sometimes and you see like the call numbers on the regions, he's the one that messes it up with the FFO. Uh-huh. Like whose name starts FF? Nope, he does.
Messes it up for our shelvers all the time. So both of
that's just my side note of one thing I remember about. I always remember his name when I think of
you're like, he's that author that you like wave your fist at when you need to shelf his items. So both of these series are genuinely absurd, hilarious stories full of British humor and wordplay. While the Thursday Next novels are, you know, these fantastical mysteries, and you know, Hitchhiker is of course science fiction, the tone and humor of these are very similar. And I know I've said it a lot in this episode because I can't seem to not, but I loved this series. You know, it combines fantasy, adventure, and mystery. And this series of novels really like revels in literary allusions, puns, and outrageous situations. So Thursday Next is this detective who, you know, narrates her stories. And she recounts the deadly danger as she battles arch-villains in the global megacorporation that controls this alternative Britain. Kind of hops in and out of classic fiction, you know, she tracks evildoers, and, you know, her as an offbeat character, you know, she's still very sympathetic and very believable. So there's all kinds of elements wrapped up into this series, but it's definitely, you know, fast-paced and fun and witty, and it's just great.
I know for those of us, myself included, where Pride and Prejudice is the one book that I will always own, and you read it every few years just to revisit your old friends, I would recommend the book Eligible by Curtis Sittenfeld. It's a modern retelling of our classic favorite. And if you really want to scrutinize the book, this is probably not one to do that. But there are some really fun modern retellings. So Longbourn has been transformed into an oversized and neglected tutor in the upscale Hyde Park neighborhood of Cincinnati. Elizabeth Bennet writes for a women's magazine. Jane Bennet teaches yoga. Lydia and Kitty Bennet are CrossFit enthusiasts on paleo diets. Heartthrob Chip Bingley is a reality TV star. And Fitzwilliam Darcy, a neurosurgeon. And Mrs. Bennet now has Valium and online shopping to distract her from constant anxiety. So there were some fun modern twists to the story. And if you're a fan of Pride and Prejudice, I'd recommend that one.
And for you horror fans out there, if you just can't get enough and you just absolutely devour it, you'll find likable characters in even the darkest books by Neil Gaiman. So, you know,
we love Neil Gaiman. We love him.
Yeah, we're like, we could talk about his books, but let's talk about how much we love him.
Yeah.
We're like, you all know his books, but he's such an advocate for libraries. It's just so good.
I know. And he did the short quarantine video for TED at the end of April. And I don't know. What do we love about him, Kelsey? We love his powerful storytelling voice. I just think it's mesmerizing. And in this video, he shares a passage that he wrote from Fragile Things, which is a short story collection that was published in 2006. And at the end of the video, he says, "We are tougher than we seem. We are tougher than we think. Our stories will outlive us. Let's make them good." And I think One of the things that's so special about his likable characters, because you do, you know, they're dark stories so often, but there's still, you know, redemption and humanity and, you know, people to cheer for in those stories. And I think you said one of your favorite books, Kelsey, was the Graveyard Book.
Yes. I just actually recently reread it, but I actually listened to it this time and he narrates it. And I thought I loved it before. I love it even more now. He's a phenomenal narrator and just, you kind of experience the story in a different way. So I recommend both reading and listening to it.
We're big fans. Love us some Neil Gaiman. I suppose, moving on.
Yeah.
Now we've got that out of the way, huh?
Yeah, I suppose. We should move on.
You know, for those of you readers who want to stick with the bestsellers, we've got you covered, of course. We've got recommendations for you there. We were talking about this, Kelsey, a little bit, and one of our thoughts on this, I thought you had a really great perspective, was that sometimes you just need something easy and fun to read.
Mm-hmm. I think there's something about like bestsellers that they're just kind of like easy and comfortable to read, especially if a series, you know, has a ton of books, like you don't have to think too hard about what you want to read next. So, you know, for example, if you picked Sue Grafton's Kinsey Millhone Mysteries, you know, there's practically the whole alphabet, you know, and you get to just follow along as this hard-boiled private investigator, you know, investigates murders and searches for missing persons. Oftentimes these are cold cases, but, you know, you fall in love with how sassy and practical she is, and, you know, and you empathize with the fact that she's this orphan and a loner, but, like, you know, she doesn't hesitate to confront vicious criminals who, you know, stop at nothing to get away. So you're just kind of like, okay, you pick one up and then you can just follow the whole series all the way through. And I think there's something really comforting and nice in that. Maybe not the storylines themselves, but.
But they definitely are likable. You know, your protagonist is likable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, David Baldacci is another author known for writing characters that readers come to care about. The King and Maxwell novels is a series that offers pulse-pounding suspense. They can have a disturbing or menacing tone. And that being said, I found this very interesting that these were not the best reviewed of his books. Publishers Weekly said the first book in the series, Split Second, was a relatively weak offering from this best-selling author, sunk by a cartoonish villain and absurd plot. But it did introduce two of Baldacci's most memorable characters, former Secret Service agents Sean King and Michelle Maxwell, in business together as private investigators in small town Wrightsburg, Virginia. I was kind of surprised to see such a poor review of such a popular series. But then I'm like, well, I have to see if, you know, the reviews sort of redeemed as the series went on. So in the second offering in the series, Our Game, they say that despite fair clues, few if any readers will ID the villain or villains before they're revealed. And a snappy surprise ending will have Baldacci's many fans remembering why they love this author so much. So I don't often recommend that people start with the second book in a series, but I might in this, case.
Maybe skip
based on those reviews. So I think you could probably start with the second book in the series, Our Game, and then you might enjoy it more. I don't know.
And I think kind of another best-selling author that, you know, we see, you know, is perennially popular at the library is Janet Ivanovich. She's probably best known for her Stephanie Plum mysteries, but she also writes the Fox and O'Hare novels and then kind of her newest series, the Night and Moon books. So I myself have read pretty much everything she's ever written and definitely all of her series. You know, she just writes these like fun, easy to read books. You know, they're page turners that you can get lost in, and they kind of allow you to just take a break from the real world. And you kind of, like you mentioned before, Jen, get to visit these familiar friends. You know, do they have the most in-depth plot where I can't figure out who did it? No. But, you know, there's still just that, like, you have to know what happens to these characters and you want to know what happens to them.
When you pick up one of these books, you know what you're getting.
Yeah. So Stephanie Plum, you know, kind of isn't the best bounty hunter in New Jersey, but, you know, she always gets her man, kind of with more luck than talent usually. But, you know, her life is always exciting and it's always fun to read about her, you know, that there's all these bail jumping criminals, car chases, missing persons, all while she's just trying to find a decent guy. And it's a very, you know, humorous and action-packed series. So it kind of really falls under that whole chick lit genre. You know, she's very sassy and there's a whole wealth of other sassy characters as well, including her grandma. So, you know, there's definitely a wide variety there. And then in her Fox and O'Hare series, you know, that one, they're kind of more caper novels, but they're still very amusing and kind of has this offbeat tone, but they follow FBI Special Agent Kate O'Hare, who uses her own schemes to outmaneuver charming con man Nicholas Fox. And then he ends up kind of becoming this unlikely partner for her when her next mission, you know, pits her against a formidable adversary. So kind of the whole series is how you can be an FBI agent, but then also partner up with this con man who, you know, is breaking the law, and kind of like, how does that mesh? So it definitely leads to some interesting plot points in the books.
You know, Janet Ivanovich has been writing for a long time. What are we up to, 26 now in the Stephanie Plum mysteries?
Yeah, I think it was Twisted 26 is the latest one.
And so I know there are some, you know, readers who've read everything, but there's also readers who maybe have read, you know, a few books in the series. Maybe they quit at like book 7. Mm-hmm. But you know, maybe they're going to hear this and be like, you know what, I really did like those books and I should pick up and, you know, start reading in the series again. And I don't think you'll be disappointed.
No, and it's always kind of fun to see how the characters have evolved and like where they're at in their lives. It's kind of like that, you know, high school friend that you haven't seen in a long time and then you run into him in the grocery store. Kind of like if you pick up one of these books and you've been away for a while, then you kind of see like, oh, they've done
that's what's happened in your life. So.
Yeah, exactly.
So kind of switching gears to, if you're a fan of legal thrillers, I'm going to recommend Mickey Haller novels by Michael Conley. So this series of legal thrillers features the brooding, courageous, and likable, LA defense attorney, Mickey Haller. Made famous by Matthew McConaughey in the 2011 movie, The Lincoln Lawyer. But these books are intricately plotted, fast-paced, atmospheric, and richly detailed. Mickey Haller is introduced to readers in The Lincoln Lawyer, and he reluctantly teams up with LAPD detective Harry Bosch throughout the next three books of the series. Critics and fans alike love this series and these characters together. Michael Conley's books have sold more than 50 million copies worldwide. And I thought this was a good statement, that the electric courtroom scenes are grueling enough for even the most demanding fans of legal thrillers.
Yeah, he's one of my authors. I'm embarrassed to admit that I have never read anything that he's ever written, but he's on my to-be-read list, so I might have to give in. The Lincoln Lawyer might be a good one to start with.
I think if you're interested in, like, L.A., you know, they're gritty, I think, for sure, but they definitely are likable characters. I find them fascinating. And I think there was even a TV series, a Harry Bosch TV series done somewhere. I didn't watch it, but I will tell you, I have across all demographics of people that love these books. So, you know, young people, I have someone that I help with home delivery in her 90s, and Michael Connelly is one of her favorite authors. So, you know, just appeals across so many age groups and, you know, genders and ethnicities, just because, you know, he is such a likable character.
Oh, I'll have to get on that. Yeah. So for those of you looking for a book for a younger reader, you truly can't go wrong with Because of Winn-Dixie by Kate DiCamillo. You know, it's this classic tale, you know, she's a Newbery medalist and, you know, she's truly one of America's most beloved storytellers. So this is one that's also been made into a movie quite a few years ago. It's life in small towns and kind of, you know, the whole idea of this girl with her dog. The characters are believable and likable, of course. The story is really character driven, but it kind of has this like leisurely pace to it, which is nice for a younger reader. And then I remember from this book, I didn't know that a book could, you know, be feel good, but also sad at the same time. Right. But this book truly is, you know, and it kind of follows, you know, on this summer's day that 10-year-old India Opal Baloney goes down to the local supermarket for some groceries, and she comes home with a dog. I personally would like this to be the case whenever I go to get groceries, but hasn't happened yet. But Winn-Dixie is no ordinary dog. It's because of Winn-Dixie that Opal, you know, starts to make friends. And it's also because of Winn-Dixie that she finally dares to ask her father about her mother, who left when Opal was 3. So kind of, in fact, as Opal admits, just about everything that happens that summer is because of Winn-Dixie.
I know, it's such a good book. It's one that I recommend a lot.
It's been years since I read it, but...
Yeah. Another author that I often recommend for younger readers is Gordon Corman. And when I looked him up, he has 99 books listed in our novelist database going back to 1978. And chances are you may have read one of his books growing up. He writes fun books, realistic fiction, filled with humor and likable characters for older kids and teens. A typical Gordon Corman book has an outlandish storyline full of hilarious misadventures and an attention-grabbing writing style that boys especially seem to enjoy. A couple of his more recent titles are Super Gifted and What's His Face? And School Library Journal said that Super Gifted is humorous, relatable, and full of heart. But if your young reader prefers fantasy stories, because not everybody loves realistic fiction, you know, there are the young readers who want fantasy. One series I'd recommend is the Savvy series by Ingrid Law. And the series recounts the lively adventures of Mississippi Mibbs Beaumont, whose 13th birthday has revealed her savvy, a magical power unique to each member of her family. Kirkus notes that there are no serious villains in these stories, only challenges to be met, friendships to be made, and some growing up to do. Her storytelling is rollicking, her language imaginative, and she's got a cast of wacky, yet believable and delightful characters. So there you go. There's our recommendations for younger readers.
Yeah. And if you all didn't know this already, you can subscribe to Next Reads newsletters from the Sioux City Public Library and get curated book recommendations sent directly to your inbox. You can sign up for your favorite genres or interests on the library's website, which is www.siouxcitylibrary.org. And about once a month, the library will send you a short newsletter with featured books curated by our staff.
One of the newsletters that I just received had a May flowers section, where the books featured all had names of flowers in the title. And I thought that was quite clever. It was fun.
And kind of another nice thing right now about these newsletters is that the featured books are all available through Overdrive.
A lot of us are downloading our books right now, still. But before we end this episode, Kelsey and I just have to share a little love and thank our producer, Jorge Quezada, for his work on this podcast. He's awesome, and he's talented, and he makes us sound like professionals. We couldn't do this without him, and I hope he doesn't edit this out. I want it to make the final recording, please.
And we really couldn't do this without him.
Thank you, Jorge, for your excellent work in making us sound good.
So we love to hear from our listeners. You know, send us your feedback or share your favorite likable characters or feel-good stories at first50pages@kwit.org. This is Kelsey.
This is Jen.
And thank you for listening to the First 50 Pages.